Our next speaker is Antonis from Occupied London. That's a magazine, not the place. He has some Occupied Londons with him, which are donations, and the money will go to prisoners who have been taken during the Greek revolt. He's giving a short intro now and will be doing a more detailed, longer talk and film later after dinner.
Yeah, okay, so I guess what I'm mostly, my main reason for being here is to talk about the Greek revolt. But in these 10 minutes I've got in this panel, I'm going to completely bypass the main revolt itself. And I just want to talk to you about two very brief moments from Greece in December and January. And they might first seem fairly relevant to what we're going to be talking about here today, so please bear with me, because I'm going to explain how I think they're actually very much linked up. So there's two events that have happened in Greece since December, after the revolt, that in my opinion, in many people's opinions, couldn't have happened before the revolt and couldn't have happened without it. The first one is the story of Konstantina Kuneva, who's a migrant cleaner and a trade unionist in Athens. And there's actually some leaflets going around. I don't know where the rest of them are. Yeah, there's a few more over there. Basically explaining her story in detail. And there's a number of reasons why her story is really important. Konstantina was attacked. She was a radical grassroots trade unionist in Athens at her workplace. And on the 23rd of December, that is around 16 days into the revolt, right in the middle of the revolt, she was attacked by some thugs who were obviously paid by her employing company. And what they did is that they threw acid, sulfuric acid, I think it's called, onto her eyes and forced her to drink some of it too. So Konstantina's now basically, she's definitely lost eyesight from one of her two eyes, probably might actually lose eyesight from a second as well. Doesn't seem like she's going to be able to be fed properly again. It was a very severe attack, a murderous attack. Her story is very barbaric, but it's not necessarily unique in the sense that I'm afraid that there must be very similar stories happening across the world and across Greece that we just don't get to hear about. What was quite amazing about Konstantina's story and was exceptional was the wave of solidarity that developed around her case. So 4 days after the attack, the headquarters of her employing company were occupied by people in solidarity who held it for a good few days, maybe weeks. There was occupations all across the country, there was demonstrations, and this kind of movement, one of its peak moments was this demonstration in Athens, and I wanted to double check the date. I think it's the 22nd of January, so it was 1 month after the attack. 10,000 people marched in Athens in solidarity with Konstantina. And you know, this is the kind of movement that we're talking about, a completely grassroots, kind of like genuinely grassroots movement that developed in solidarity with her. Now, the reason why this is so important is that it's just impossible, even by the Greek standards, there might already be some intense social kind of antagonism going on, but there's absolutely no way that you would have got 10,000 people on the streets marching for a migrant cleaner that was attacked at their workplace. This is just something completely out of the Greek reality as we knew it before December. It just wouldn't happen, not even in our best kind of dreams. And this is something that did happen. So this is one moment that we can keep from the revolt that kind of continues into date. And it's one kind of reaction that the movement developed that's very positive. So during the revolt, I'm going to talk about this in much more length, I hope, in the evening. But during the revolt, this is one of the things that people did. You know, when the trade union congress, a kind of reformist trade union congress, refused to call for an indefinite strike, people occupied their headquarters in response. When the journalists, the mainstream kind of media, refused to cover the revolt, people occupied the headquarters of a journalist trade union. You know, there was a direct kind of action that was like a main element of the revolt. You know, people, which also, of course, replies to this kind of argument that the revolt had no demands. Of course it did, and they were very kind of direct. It wasn't even demanding, which is even better. It was just like people were taking what was theirs. So this is something that has stayed, and this you can see in the example of Konstantina's case, when people saw that one of our own is being attacked, they took direct action in response and they took to the streets, which is quite amazing. But of course, this is what happens on our side. Now, what happens on the other side, which is the side of the state and the kind of order that is in danger, what happened is probably best exemplified by what happened in Athens on Tuesday, last Tuesday, 5 days ago. This is probably a story maybe many of you haven't heard about because it really wasn't covered in national or international media. But there was a severe attack. Basically, this social center in Exarchia in Athens, which is the area where the revolt started from, it's the area where, you know, the kind of traditional anarchist and lefty area. So right in the heart of this area is this place called the place, the migrant place, which is basically a space used by lefty and migrant groups. And someone, which is most certainly a fascist, walked up to the place and threw a hand grenade. Luckily, not through the window, through the window. It was a double glazed window. The first layer broke, the second one didn't. So the hand grenade bounced back and exploded outside. If a hand grenade had gone through the window, there was about 40 people in the meeting there. A conscientious objectators assembly. We would have had a good few dead, not just one or two, but definitely a few of them. So it was pure luck. I mean, this was a murderous attack, and it was just pure luck that there was no dead there. So it's clear that they want. I mean, it's amazing how, you know, history kind of repeats itself. They want the strategy of tension. They want dead. They want dead from our side, so that, you know, for whatever reasons, they want to repeat what happened in Italy in the 70s, basically. And of course, there was no coverage of this event in the media whatsoever. The very brief mentions that there were really, really dirty, kind of distorted, kind of claiming, or that maybe it was actually a kind of like a disagreement within lefty groups itself. Maybe some lefty groups were trying to, like, you know, had some sort of disagreement with that group and, like, were trying to take revenge for whatever reasons. Of course, it's bullshit. I mean, we can't even begin to think that something like this would have happened. So it's basically, it's these two images. I'm trying to bring in two images because mainly to correspond to the title of today's event, which is, you know, we're an image from the future, which was one of the main slogans of the revolt in Athens. That what was happening right there was something that we're going to be seeing over and over again. And I think, in my opinion, these are both images from a future that we're actually living, you know, right now. You know, on the one hand, you have an amazing wave of solidarity. It's an amazing kind of putting to practice this slogan that came out of the revolt that said nothing should be remain unanswered no more. You know, any sort of provocation, any sort of attack from their side, we have to respond to, we have to reply, we have to challenge. And this is what happens. You know, people are just looking for the next opportunity, not just an excuse. It's not an excuse no more. You're just looking for the next. You know, you want to be out on the street fighting them, fighting their order, and you're just looking for the next visible kind of like target, the next kind of obvious opportunity to do so. So Konstantina's case was a very clear case. You know, we're talking about a migrant, a woman, a precarious worker, low-wage worker who actually denied the role that was like imposed on her and like challenged it actively and said, you know, I'm going to take action against this through like a grassroots trade union. I mean, it doesn't become more obvious than this. And of course, for this, she was attacked. So this is a perfect kind of like kind of symbol around which to mobilize. So you got this, and on the other hand, you've got their kind of response, which again, I mean, this kind of attack on Tuesday is something that we wouldn't even begin to imagine. You know, we know that the fascists are ruthless, we know that they've got knives, that they've got, you know, that they might stab comrades, that they might attack on the street. But this kind of blind attack where you want like tens, you want scores of dead, this is something that's completely, you couldn't imagine before December. So how does all this relate to the global talk about the crisis? I mean, it's what Kier was saying, we live in a new kind of era already. It's here, you know, it's happening, it's something new. We have to start thinking under new terms. You know, this is a new condition that we're facing. This is a new condition that they're facing because they see that we're mobilizing on a completely different level than before. And they are going to act because they want to kind of like save what they've got. So talks like this tonight are more than important, very essential for us to go forward. You know, we have to try to think of new ideas of how to link up all these struggles.